Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We don't think that it was just good policy to be mailing out people because you just can't predict how people are going to behave and act, and we're not mind readers. So it's important for us to make sure that we're taking care of ballots and being secure with them.
To have families book a hotel room, not realizing the large percentage of potentially dangerous people to them and their children are in this facility, is criminal.
Today, we mark a meaningful step forward in our shared duty to protect Arizona's students, not with rhetoric, but with real reform.
Veterans make up more than 30% of the federal workforce, and it is now estimated that Donald Trump and his administration has already fired more than 6,000 men and women who have served in uniform.
We need a person who generates confidence in the party. It's the job of the party to promote our candidates. It's the job of the chair to raise money for our candidates and to promote our candidates.
SB 1268 undermines the core role of hospitals as places of healing by turning them into de facto immigration enforcement agents.
And joining me to talk about a difference of opinion between the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and County Recorder, a seeming difference of strategic opinion between the Trump team and a gubernatorial candidate and more, are Doug Cole of High Ground. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mark.
And Democratic strategist Tony Connie. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Doug, let's start with a report that came out this week from Axios that there were some Trump campaign officials who had been working either officially or unofficially with the Karen Taylor Robeson campaign. They apparently have decided that she was not advertising on TV early enough after the president endorsed her and have decided that they are no longer part of the campaign. Assuming that this reporting is correct, and we don't have any reason to think that it's not, how big of a deal could that be for Karen Taylor Robeson and her campaign?
Well, we all could see this coming a long time ago. I mean, the Trump organization has a history of doing double endorsements. We saw that with Blake Masters and Abe Hamadeh to replace Congresswoman Debbie Lesko out in CD8. In politics, it becomes an industry, especially if you have someone that's a president or a governor, and then their political consultants then use that to go out and bring more into the fold. And to be honest, because I'm a political consultant, to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened here. Trump endorsed Karen Taylor Robeson early on, but most people thought, okay. So as soon as the budget deal was made in Congress, why did Andy Biggs change his vote, right? All of a sudden, he's on the budget. So I think this is an excuse to move away and have these folks move over to the Biggs campaign. Is it a temporary setback for Karen Taylor Robeson? Yes, but it's not fatal, in my opinion.
Does this, do you think, precede the president rescinding his endorsement?
I don't think he will do that because of the makeup of Arizona. He needs the business community, and he needs the portion of the Arizona Republican Party, like myself, that's not raised or practices in the mega world, but is a cradle Republican, and we are Republicans are still the biggest voting base in the mm-hmm. state, et cetera. So if I was Karen Taylor Robeson, a lot of people don't know Andy Biggs. I mean, he's well-known in the East Valley. He's well-known in his congressional district. He only had one really hard race, and that was his first primary where he only beat Christine Jones by, I think it was 9 votes, something.
A very small margin. Yeah.
After many recounts. So he really hasn't been tested statewide. And I would, if I was Karen Taylor Robeson, I would take my money and start defining who Andy Biggs is, because we all know who she is because she spent a lot of money running against Kerry Lake. She's already spent a lot of money in here recently. I would start defining who Andy Biggs is and talk about issues that Arizonans care about.
Tony, how big of a deal is this, do you think, to her campaign to lose members of Trump's team?
I'm sure she didn't want it to happen. And I do think it is true that it almost looks like there was a commitment that was made to do some sort of advertising that would have included Trump, which was good for Trump if his face is up on TV. And then once that finally happened, even though they said it was later than it was, these consultants sort of just cut bait and left. And so maybe they got their check. Who knows? But the, you know,
I'm sure they got their check.
Yeah, I'm sure they got the check. I mean, look, here's the thing about like the finding bigs and all this kind of stuff. Like, how's Robeson going to do that? There really isn't a ton of room ideologically between the two of them. They have some differences on things, but she has not demonstrated a willingness to stand up to the Republican or MAGA establishment. And what's going to happen? She's going to attack him for being against Medicaid? There's no way she would do that. So, you know, I think this is a huge setback for her, just because I think that they were very excited that they were able to get that initial endorsement. And obviously, I think what's going to happen now is she's going to continue to use or start to use her wealth to just tell voters over and over again, hey, I'm the one that was endorsed by Trump. And we'll see whether or not money rolls in on the other side to support Biggs. I think that the issue here is that she does have a bit of an authenticity problem when it comes to voters. That's what happened last time. And I don't know how this helps her overcome that.
Well, I hate to disagree with my friend Tony.
But you'll do it anyway.
I'm going to do it anyway. On the Medicaid issue, I think Congressman Juan Ciscomani's done a very good job about messaging, you know, really, really threading the needle on the Medicaid. There's a group of Republicans in the House that has really said, wait a minute here, these are important programs, especially for a border state like Arizona. So yeah, I think there's a good message point to go after Congressman Biggs on Medicaid, and because there's a huge constituency in the Republican Party that uses Medicaid.
Sure. Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, I think so. I just am not sure that like Trump is going to be this strategic in thinking about how he needs to get the moderate business Republicans in Arizona. This doesn't seem to be the way that he's making decisions on endorsements. I think it probably he's not going to unendorse because that would be admitting he made some sort of a mistake. But look, I there's no doubt about the fact that her campaign would have preferred if she would have stayed the sole endorser.
I don't disagree.
Yeah,
sure.
On that point.
All right. So, Doug, you'd mentioned then Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, now, of course, a member of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, who is having a bit of a kerfuffle with the Maricopa County recorder, Justin Heap, over the administration of this summer's special congressional election. This is, of course, the election to replace the late Raul Grijalva. Maricopa County is just a very small part of that district. It's mostly Pima County and southern and even into western Arizona.
Right. Santa Cruz County.
Santa Cruz County, right. But there's some questions about whether or not voters who are on the active early voting list, I think is what it's called now, like who should get ballots. And it seems as though Recorder Heap is proposing a plan that maybe when he was in the legislature, he would not have been a big fan of.
Well, that's exactly correct. What he proposed to the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, and they voted 4-0 against him when the supervisors wasn't there that day. So it's not just Debbie Lesko. Three of her other colleagues also agreed with her. This was offered in a presentation to the board by Sam Stone, who is
the chief of staff
to Recorder Heap, that in these very rural precincts that are out in the far reaches of Gila Bend, et cetera, out on the Tohono Nation lands, that they would just go ahead and mail the ballots to the registered voters, whether they request them or not. Now, this is completely antithetical to what happened in what the Republicans fought then Maricopa County Recorder, who now Secretary of State Adrian Fontes. He wanted to do that during the pandemic to mail ballots to all voters during that time, and the courts turned him down because what the court said, and now also has County Attorney Rachel Mitchell in a letter to Justin Heap said, look, on election law, you have to explicitly be authorized to do an action. And mailing ballots to people that have not requested them in a congressional race is not explicitly allowed. Okay, it is in school district races, it is in city and town races, and special taxing districts, but not in other elections. So she said, no, you can't do that. This is unlawful. So the board said, we're not doing that.
How surprising is it that the County Board of Supervisors, which is, of course, as it has been for many years, controlled by Republicans, is having this kind of disagreement with a Republican county recorder?
Well, unfortunately, the history since the Andy Thomas days and the Joe Arpaio days, there's been a lot of a lot of disagreements between the County Board of Supervisors, who controls all their budgets and sets county policy, and various elected row officers. And unfortunately, this is continuing with Justin Heap being the new Maricopa County Recorder.
Tony, what do we make of the fact? I mean, this is a very Democratic-leaning district, the late Raul Grijalva's mm-hmm. district. So really, the primary is kind of where the action is. But, like, are you surprised that there's this kind a disagreement of this nature over something that in the past Republicans have generally been pretty unified against sending ballots to voters who did not ask for them?
I'm not surprised that the fight is happening, because this is just another example of the sort of fighting the Republican Party along the MAGA Turning Point USA line, right? And this is what's happening. And, you know, from my outside perspective, it looks like he sort of stepped in this from a political perspective on the Republican side, and the county supervisors, who are probably very frustrated and fed up with the way that they've been interacting with them, just decided to pounce. And, you know, from a policy perspective, I want voting to be as easy as possible. I want it to be I want the administration of election to be as cheap as possible. I think I was surprised that this decision was made, because first of all, it's a Democratic district, and you know, when Fontes made his suggestion, it was something that would have happened to all voters. This is just to a specific type of voter, mm-hmm.
and not that many of them.
And not that
yeah,
many.
It's like 100 or so.
It made me wonder, you know, like, what is their motivation? And with the history of wanting to sort of like pull people off the voter rolls and do all these kind of things that, you know, the Turning Point USA people have pushed for, I was like, is this some sort of a trick to get people to fall off of, you know, the active voter list? Like, is there something that they're doing here? It really raised red flags for me, because I just couldn't figure out why they would do this. The issue, I think, that is the most concerning from the outside is that Sam Stone and Recorder Heap implied that they had gotten sign off from the county attorney, and the county attorney was like, that's not true. And so there's some shenanigans going on.
Yeah, and I also think, I know we started the segment talking about Supervisor, former Congresswoman Lesko. Immediately, Gina Silvota, who is the chairwoman of the Arizona Republican Party, mm-hmm. said, I don't agree. The party does not agree with the county recorder. We are for election integrity, and this is not election integrity in our mind. So she immediately took the supervisor's side.
Well, and Tony, this is not the first sort of disagreement, let's say, between the county supervisors and the county recorder. This is obviously a very small, for Maricopa County, this election, you know, kind of small potatoes in terms of number of voters, the responsibility it has. But, I mean, we're not that far off from the midterms next year. It seems as though these two levels of government need to kind of get it together.
Yeah, it would be great if they got it together. But this is this fight's been going on, and it's gotten aggressive, and people have, you know, chimed in aggressive ways against the supervisors, against the recorder. And I think, you know, from my perspective, I love the mess here between elected officials. This is a fight over ideology, really, you know, and perspective, you know, but I really would like our elections to be drama free.
Yeah.
When it comes to administration. So I do hope that they figure it out.
Tony, some more drama within the state Democratic Party this week. We started the week with a letter from one of the precinct committee leaders in the Democratic Party calling on the new chair of the party, Robert Branscombe, to resign. This, of course, follows some pretty significant back and forth between some of the top elected Democratic officials in the state, saying that Branscombe has lost their trust. He was saying that he was having some trouble with them. Like, what's going on with the Arizona Democrats right now?
I think there's a lot of people who have lost trust in the chair, and I think that's what it is. And you're seeing it here. And look, people who have been involved in party politics know that there's often disagreements, that this stuff happens. I think that there are people who are frustrated that the chair's sort of lack of judgment, in my perspective, to take a disagreement that he had and go straight to the media with it originally. And, you know, I there's near unanimity right now that people are concerned about his chairmanship. You know, you've got all the statewide elected officials on the Democratic side who've expressed concerns. You have, I think 10 of the county chairs have expressed some concerns with the process. And, you know, and there's some real issues here. And I think the difference between this and some of the other fights is this isn't about ideology. This isn't some there's one camp of people versus another camp of people based on things they want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. This is really about trust, and it's about competence. And, you know, the big news this week also was that the state party's one of their big fundraising dinners, the Washington Post reported that they canceled it because there were only 11 RSVPs, which it says I saw that and I was like, did I get invited? And I didn't get invited. And it speaks to sort of this competence thing where it's like, oh, I guess they just didn't invite people to it. So what's happening is people are really putting pressure on him to either fix things or to step down. And I don't think this is going to be a huge devastating blow for the Democratic Party. I wish we didn't have to deal with this right now.
Yeah.
But people really do agree. I mean, like, they're spending more money than they're raising right now. That's not the way it should be at the party this time of year.
So do you think he ultimately steps down, or do you think he's able to fix it to the satisfaction of some of those elected Democrats, many of whom are on the ballot next year?
Yeah. And these are the people who have raised the most money for the Democrats in the history of our state. And so, like, the statewide, they know what they're doing. And they had been working with him in a weekly basis. He said on your show, he was, before all this mm-hmm. blew down, about how there's unity. And I was watching this from the outside being like, you know what? That's not the guy they wanted to be chair. But they're weeding every week. They're all, and that's the thing that hadn't been happening. So I was really optimistic. So I was really disappointed when this thing blew up. But I think that there will be some sort of a resolution. And if there isn't, there's other options here where, the statewide elected officials and everybody can come together and do what the Republican Party did a number of years ago and just run a lot of their operations through a county party or something. And so, look, this is frustrating, but I'm not too worried about it. I'm annoyed about it. And I do hope that he is starting to listen to the large number of people who are asking him to either step down or to change.
Doug, do you think Democrats should be worried?
I'm sitting here listening to Tony, and this is deja vu all over again. All I had to do, go back, and the same conversation was going on in these very chairs in front of these very microphones about the Republican Party
yep.
a few years back when Kelly Ward was running that ship, and it was all about her, and it was all about promoting what she wanted to do and her ego and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on election night parties and fundraisers going bad. And as Tony alluded to, then a lot of the business folks in our party went to the Yuma County Party and ran their own fundraising operations and campaign operations through that and worked around her. So, yeah, being a party chair is a tough job. And I think Gina Svoboda has stabilized our party and has done a good job of bringing folks together. I know she's getting attacked by some quarters from Turning Point Action and others over there, but she's holding her own. The Republican Party's had a history of having these type of problems that is now going on in the Democratic Party. And I think it's just inherent of being a party chair. This is not unique in Arizona. It's a tough, tough job because everybody that's a member of these parties, the activists, they have their own idea about what the party's direction ought to be. And sometimes it doesn't gel with everybody. And there's always fighting going on and there's always bickering going on and rules being challenged, et cetera. It's a tough job. So mm-hmm. So my hat's off to those that put themselves out for it. But this is going to continue to happen. And we'll continue to talk about this 5 years from now. It'll be the Democrat or back to the Republicans next time. I don't know.
And, and the interesting thing about this is that, like, the activist side of the party, the people who – there are people who voted for him, who supported him, who are raising concerns about this. I think that, when we're talking about infighting, it's becoming more like people are frustrated with a person, maybe two people. And so – there is some unity around the fact that maybe there needs to be a change here. And so, we'll see. He's going to be under a lot of pressure at the upcoming state committee meeting.
I wonder, though, if you're going to have this kind of thing happen, is it better for it to happen in the Democrats' case in 2025 than in 2026?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
100%.
100%.
So, I mean, Tony, do you think this affects next year's races at all? I mean, it would seem as though there's got to be some pressure to get this sorted out before too much longer.
Yeah, I think that it will be more difficult from there. There'll be work that we'll have to accomplish if he doesn't fix things or step down. But I think in the end, with the number of people who are raising concerns, if they'll just move to somewhere else. And I think that, you know, the people are going to still be raising money. And, you know, so I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, the top of the ticket's going to be Katie Hobbs, right? And mm-hmm. she's already raising a lot of
money.
Ton of money, doing very well on that front. And I think we don't have a senatorial race next year for the first time.
First time in forever.
Forever, because we had all these appointments and such. So that's going to be the focus race. And you know, you always look to the top. But you need, on the down ballot races, you really need a strong party organization to help those candidates.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if in some ways, and we talked about this, Doug, I think, when all this was going down with the state Republican Party, if all of this kind of gets to the idea of maybe the party's not carrying the same weight or having the same import now as they have in years past with the, you know, the invention of super PACs and maybe going to county parties and the ability of other groups to raise money and message, you know, for candidates. Tony, do you think that this in some way maybe just sort of hastens the I don't want to say the demise, but the less relevance of state parties?
Well, I don't think it will, because at least on the Democratic side, we've been very good at running what we call a coordinated campaign, which is where everybody comes together to run a campaign up and down the ballot, mm-hmm. right? And that typically is run through the state party, and that is the preference, is to go back and to be able to do that through the state through the state party. So, you know, I think that people will want the state party to be the entity that is being used for that. But I mean, geez, everybody really is raising some alarms here. I mean, the staff union wrote a letter saying they were concerned about some of the things that he said. I just think there's going to be a lot of pressure, you know, for him to step down.
Yeah, and running coordinated campaigns has also been very successful on the Republican side, because you get preferential rates on mail, mm-hmm. It just makes things a lot cheaper, and you can touch more voters.
Interesting. All right, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. Doug Cole, Tony Connie, thanks you both for coming in. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.